Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we'll be covering the Minotaurs for real this time. with a focus on their history, the mysteries around them, and a dive into how they function the lore.
John, come on, man. Let me tell you what we're going to do. We're going to cover the Minotaurs, the mystery of their history. Can't leave that one out there.
I really just want to tell everyone that we covered the Lords of Terror last week, and Brad actually did get very sick.
Yeah, that is true. wildly sick. Like, covering the Lords of Terror actually almost killed me.
Yeah, you actually did get wildly ill afterwards. Anyway, just saying it. 40K Lorecast, weekly show in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Please follow and comment, as it really does aid our algorithm and helps push us out to more and more listeners. Also, we'd love if you check out our YouTube channel for our bi-monthly Q&As and some other shows that are popping up there. In addition, if you like this show and want some more of it, check out our other show, The History of 40K, where we talk about the history of the game of 40K on the tabletop. If you like the sound of my voice, check out my other show, Retro Recall, where I talk about video games in the 80s and 90s. Some of them are good. Some of them are not. And if you want to support us, check out the links to our merchandise and our Patreon. Massive thank you to everyone who's contributed already to the Patreon. The Patreon is awesome. It's helping us expand out a lot more. It's also just genuinely, guys, thank you. It does help us pay bills and do some fun stuff. We're going to have a pretty big glow up at Adepticon this year. A lot of that's because of Patreon. So thank you guys for that. For those who don't know, Patreon, $4.99 a month. You get this show and History of 40K ad-free, or still $4.99 a month. A bunch of the foreign listeners were like, hey, you keep making comments about other countries. What about the United States? So, you know, we'll do United States, and we're going to start where I was born, Philadelphia. Kiss my ass, you're from Ohio. Cheesesteaks, Scrapple, Water Ice, Wawa, and the greatest American football team to ever live, the Eagles. Go Birds. It's also the birthplace of the nation. You're a Raider fan. I don't want to hear a peep. Raider fan, and you live in Ohio. No. But it is actually the birthplace of the nation, which is pretty cool. But I guess that's better than Water Ice, which I understand that those two words don't make a lot of sense together. Whatever, my wife and I have had this discussion. But for visitors, Philadelphia is kind of a cultural phenomenon. Founded in 1682 by William Penn, an English Quaker searching for religious freedom, the city's kind of followed that history of independence, mostly, for a lot of its existence. If you want to visit, it is really cool. You can go down to Independence Hall. We can see where the Declaration of Independence was written and signed. It's also where they wrote the Constitution. Yeah, they left a lot of people out of that document. I'll go ahead and call that one out. Let's screw them for that move. There's also a kick-ass zoo, the awesome science museum, good natural history museum, and you know, and more. And if you want to experience a sporting game, go. We are a delight. I mean, don't. Now, you know what? Go. It's a lot of fun. Philadelphia sports are a joy. And I'll also call it out. Outside of New York, LA, San Francisco, and Chicago, Philadelphia is probably the best food scene in the country. It's massive diversity of foods and flavors. And even better news, despite our little run there of being the murder capital, we've cleaned it up. We're down to 23rd. I had to look it up today just to make sure. So still watch your ass, but you're doing much better, which does, by the way, put us, before Brad grumbles, behind. We're doing better than Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, and Akron. You have four cities in your horrible state that are higher murder rates than Philadelphia, so I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, because you guys are underachievers.
No, we were overachievers for quite a few years there. Got a little dicey.
When you guys were beating D.C.? Yep.
Yep, we're kicking Chicago's ass. That wasn't an ideal time. Anyway, but lastly, also Discord. So if you don't like any of the comments I just made about Philadelphia or those other cities, feel free to come into Discord and I'll explain to you how awesome my city is. And because we have wonderful things like tasty cakes. They're tasty and they're cake. But join the Discord.
You do know that eventually we say where we're going. Eventually, you're going to get an Ohio lynch mob that's going to come after you and find out where you're going. Tell people where we're going.
It's Ohio, I assume. it's just It's just not that scary. I assume they'll get really riled up and then that Midwest politeness will come right through. Like, oh, we're not that mad, you know? Like, that's the thing. Like, you badmouth Boston, you're going to get punched. You badmouth Ohio, you're going to get scolded. You're scarier than Indiana, all right? You are. You're much more intimidating than Indiana.
I don't even know what to say to that one.
Anyway, come join our Discord and yell at me. It's half the fun. But also come to our Discord and have real fun. Come to our Discord, great place to learn about literature, talk about the lore. Brad's actually now doing some coaching events in there, which is pretty cool. It's a great spot to learn about either how to play the game, more about the lore, currently, or just generally hang out. Memes, talk about your pets, talk about food.
Also,
place just rocks.
The meme channel has been killing it lately. Chef's kiss to everybody in there. There's been some great stuff.
All right, but let's get into the Minotaurs for real this time. All right. Starting off with, the Minotaurs are actually a really complicated chapter, as we don't know anything about their founding or true history. And this is because any and all records are redacted.
On purpose, in the lore itself. The thing is, they also, I would say, we know a bunch about their founding, kind of, because there's a bunch of conflicting tales about their founding on purpose.
Yes, and that's where it's what ends up happening with them is the authority of the Lords of Terra have redacted basically everything that they can redact. The only stuff that they can't redact is when the Minotaurs engage in actions within the Imperium, like Bedab. So when they show up in Bedab, the Minotaurs appear in Imperial history. But stuff like their structure, their organization, their history, completely opaque. And that actually even makes their history confusing, because we only are really aware of the Minotaur's existence as being a firm existence for the last 1,000 years, but M41-ish.
Yeah, so many tales of before that also. And the thing is that a lot of times the Minotaurs only have real, I'm doing air quotes, no one can see me, but I'm still doing air quotes.
Yeah, that's the tradition.
Yeah, is when they interact with other Astartes. And that's a big deal because the other Astartes chapters kind of hate their faces.
Yeah, for a lot of good reasons we're going to get to shortly. So let's go back to the very first instance of the Minotaurs. It's actually M32. So not long after all the Primarchs were gone from the galaxy, Chaos staged this attack on Segmentum Solar. World Eaters, Night Lords, and Iron Warriors led Chaos cults that created a series of rebellions on the port side of Segmentum Solar. Yeah, I'm doing that now. You know what? It makes as much sense as northeast, southwest. So we're going port side.
John, was the west side of Segmentum Solar.
We're going port. We're off the port side. Took a bunch of heat from my Blackbeard comments. So hi ho, here we go. We're going port side.
Well, let's talk about good for Chaos Rebellions. This thing was badass, to be honest with you. This is billions of cultists on multiple planets.
And so what happened was, to stop this, 4 Space Marine chapters, kind of an interesting renown, attacked and suppressed it. So you had the Angels of Absolution, who are a Dark Angel's successor, one of the only ones that actually hunts the Fallen with them. They're very close to the actual Dark Angels. Then you have the Death Eagles, who are a Raven Guard successor, maybe? We are actually not even sure. They're believed to be. The Carcharodons. This is the first time the Carcharodons showed up. They appeared here and then went back out to dark space.
No one called them either. They just showed up.
Oh, yeah. They just showed up. They're like, hey, we're here to help. We definitely did not call you. Like, why are you here? But all right, I guess help. And then a chapter simply referred to as the Minotaurs. They're listed as the Minotaurs. There's no named chapter members, no chapter information, nothing. Just it states the Minotaurs were there. It's the least amount of information you could possibly say.
I know we had to cover this part, but I don't think this is the Minotaurs. That's brilliant. Well,
yeah, it's interesting to me because I actually think it could be. And the reason why is that because after this, there's no mention of the Minotaurs again for like 4,000 years,
until we get into 36.
But the thing is, this does track because this was a rebellion in Segmentum Solar, which put it really close to Sol, which would make the only, this is the only reason it would make sense And it gets conflicting. I'll give you kind of a reason for and a reason against. The reason for is that this rebellion, it's right by Segmentum Solar. So if they are genuinely afraid of dying and they had the Minotaurs hidden, they would throw them into this to keep themselves alive. But the flip side is that, you know, when Van Gorich is in there, when the War of the Beast comes through, there's no Minotaurs.
Goge is there. He would have been using the shit out of the Minotaurs.
Exactly. So it doesn't really make sense. This is the Minotaurs. It's just, it is, they are mentioned. So I kind of agree with Brad. It probably isn't them. Maybe they had them and they sent them off on a vision quest and they just got lost for 10,000. Who knows? But anyway, so the next appearance for them is 4,000 years later in M36. Sort of, not really. And this is, it's more their peer by name. This is when the 21st Space Marine founding occurs. This is the cursed founding.
It should have been the 13th founding because this founding went bad, bad. And
yeah.
Each one of them,
this is the dumbest founding.
Yes, but they were also, they talked a lot about they're trying to make, they were.
Oh no, I mean, from a narrative standpoint, they call it a cursed founding and I'm about to all over this.
No, thing. It wasn't cursed. It was a bunch of guys that were trying to put extra spice in the mixture and everything went wrong.
Yeah, the Madros biologist who oversaw it was trying to basically do what Call did with the Primarch project and make better Astartes. And they just made busted ones. So they made 7 chapters and they all had different genetic flaws.
He was trying to make Primaris breeds and instead got poop marines because every one of these chapters had a pretty big flaw.
No. See, that's my issue with this. You say that because that's what the lore says. Then you look them up and they don't. The Blood Angel successors are called the Lamenters.
Because
they got
sad.
Depression. They made a sad chapter. Then the Ultramarines successor, the Firehawks, got bad luck. That's what they got. Bad luck. Bad things happen to the Firehawks. So we're 0-2 and me giving a crap. Then the Salamanders got arm bones.
Yeah, man, that it isn't a good thing. It actually messes with stuff.
Has no value.
No value.
In a galaxy of power swords, no value.
I mean,
the
Sons of Amenteus actually got cooler stuff.
Yeah, they turned into Wolverine. Their bones are made of metal. So sucks going through airport security, but that's about it. But again, sounds cool on paper. Oh, awesome. These Space Marines' bones are made of metal. That sounds cool. Space Marines wear power armor, which is made of ceramite. So who cares what's on the inside?
I do, because it's cool.
Why? What's it going to matter?
Because the dude inside is stronger, faster, $6 million man.
But he's not. The Space Marines are made faster by the power armor.
They're big.
It's a useless thing.
Come on.
Yeah. Then the Flame Falcons were the only ones who were actually kind of cool because for some reason they would burst into flame like the Human Torch and would walk around burning like the Human Torch. But then the Grey Knights saw them and went, nope.
Not significant at all because they got to do that for 8 minutes. And then the Grey Knights went, heresy.
It was cool. We actually had a bunch of guys who could yell flame on and we're going to fight chaos. They, by the way, were completely loyalists. And the Grey Knights went, nope, not doing that. Nope. They're all dead.
The reason that I think of this as a real thing, to be honest with you, and I'll give you your point. Cursed founding. However, when I think of this founding, I think of the Gorgons who instantly went, yeah, we're chaos.
Well, not instantly. The Gorgons took some time. The Gorgons figured out that somehow they could trade their organs with each other. And remember that whole thing where Space Marines can eat things and gain their memories that GW just forgot about because it's kind of stupid, if I'm being honest. The Gorgons actually realized if I exchange organs with you, by the way, they said organs, not blood, organs. They just trade them out because apparently Space Marines are made of Legos. I'm not really sure how this works exactly.
Files type stuff.
Yeah. And they were doing this and they would gain each other's knowledge. But then if one guy is chaos, this is kind of how they would also gain all their chaos.
This is how you get ants, John. This is how you get ants.
This is how you get ants. That's exactly how you get ants, Lana. But yeah, so that didn't go great. They had to be exterminated. And then there was the Minotaurs. The Minotaurs were berserkers. They are basically the world leaders, berserkers. They would just run recklessly into battle, charging at enemies with reckless abandon. And
but
like,
hold on though.
Could not be told what to do.
A lot of times we say, and they're talked about in the books, is reckless abandon. And all it is somebody, you know, having a lot of aggression when they're doing their melee combat. That's not this. This is full on berserker rage. They did not listen to anything. There was no plans. There was no strategy. There was just murdering people. So reckless abandon.
The thought process around this is that this was either just randomly, hey, this was a chapter called the Minotaurs, and then they were exterminated. And then the Minotaurs we have today, it's a recycled name. It's the same way, like, there's a ton of sports teams that are named, you know, the Spartans or whatever. I mean, because you wouldn't name your sports team something stupid like a tree nut, would you?
You almost made me lose my train of thought on that one, brother.
That'd be really dumb, right? If you really wanted to instill fear in an opponent, you wouldn't want to name your sports team after a tree nut, right?
I would kill you.
That would just—it would be a really, really stupid idea. We can all agree on that, right? Like, no university, for example, would do something that stupid, right?
I will punch you in the throat. Buckeye fans everywhere, take offense to this.
No, admit it, Buckeye fans. It's stupid.
I will not.
You're named after a tree nut.
I will, however, say, what if, now this is back-to-back Brad theories. First one, nothing. I actually think that they stole these guys. I think the Lords of Terra made their own chapter after they basically took a broken chapter and stole the gene seed.
Yeah, it's possible. My theory, I think the Minotaurs are chimeric. I think they were just created, and I think they may date further back than this. I think it's a cover story, is what I think it was. I think they were like, oh yeah, they're made here. Because I do think that the Minotaurs may actually be heretical if you actually dive into how they were made.
Well, that's kind of where I was going. That's why I thought maybe they were these ones, because these guys are just corn.
I think these guys are a cover story originally for it that just kind of fell apart. But I think the Minotaurs are technically heretical because they're a chimeric gene seed, which you're not supposed to have. You know, like all Space Marine chapters are supposed to have a founding chapter. Minotaurs do not. Awesome. They are
super willing. Yeah, it's because they were put together in a lab. Everybody was
not supposed to do. But anyway, but let's get into this. So the Minotaurs, though, are real in modern, however, whatever the origin, they are real. And I've said it before, I actually prefer Codex lore. I like Black Library books, but they are a bit more hit and miss, unfortunately. The Codexes hit pretty hard. And the Codexes that hit harder than anything are the Forge World Codexes. I will admit, begrudgingly, that every now and then, the Forge World models had rules that were a little bit over the top.
Just a
wee teensy bit over the top. The Leviathan Dreadnought may have, perhaps, possibly, been a little bit OP. Same with the Dimichaeron. It's possible I could admit that maybe it was a little bit unfair. But the lore in these books is incredible. And the first one we'll start with is Imperial Armor Volume 10. By the way, you guys can download all these books. They're all available in PDF. Good luck. So, during our coverage of the Imperial Guard, we talked about Lord Solar Macarian. He is perhaps, but not just perhaps, he is the greatest Imperial Guard leader ever. History of Imperium, full stop, okay? He was born in Segmentum Pacificus, and he was a living saint of the Imperium. Under his command, 1,000 worlds joined the Imperium in 7 years. Gilliman is trying to do a fraction of that right now. He is incredible. But
Macarius,
he was
a boss, like for sure.
Oh, Macarius is incredible. The problem with him, though, he was a cult of personality. And he died a really tragic death. He actually contracted a Nurgle rot that took him. And by took him, I mean an Imperial assassin killed him so that his legacy didn't get destroyed. The issue, though, is the worlds he brought into compliance didn't join the Imperium because he really sold them on how great the Imperium was, they were like, yeah, this dude's awesome. So whatever he does, let's just hang out with him. And then he died and they went, well, screw this place because the rest of you are idiots. That dude was cool and he's gone. So peace out. Bye. The problem with that peace out bye is the Imperium calls that rebellion. And the region of space, the Segmentum Pacificus, is really rich and really wealthy. And the Lords of Terra weren't really keen to lose it. Like, it's one thing when, like, you conquer parts of the Ghoul Stars and then you lose them. It's like, eh, screw it. You know?
Yeah, true.
Juice, yeah, yeah, the juice ain't worth the squeeze. But this spot, they're like, no, we're keeping this. And so in the rebellion, these Imperial worlds also basically gave the middle finger to the Imperial Senate, saying to them, we liked Macarian. He was a hero. You guys are just punks. So we call them just pencil-pushing bitches, actually, is what I think they did call them. And so the Lords of Terra did what any spoiled brat would do when someone mocks them, have someone else go beat them up for them.
Yeah.
And this is, like, that's what they did. Yeah. Like, how dare you besmirch my honor? Tim, go punch him. Or what is it in Tropic Thunder? The key grip?
Punch him in the face. Punch hard. Him in the face hard.
All right. And so this is the first recorded interaction with a galaxy. The entire Minotaur's chapter make a name for themselves.
They're not a
chapter. Not really in a great way.
They're also just not a chapter. The
Minotaur, you're a legion.
Yeah, the Minotaurs are a legion because they also come with, there's way more than 1,000 of them for one. Also for,
well, there isn't, they never call out that there's more than 1,000. They just hint.
Yeah.
Because what they say is, we'll cover it later, they tend to like refill very quickly.
Yeah. Like real quickly. Also,
yeah,
they show up with a lot of naval and support every time.
Yeah, and we'll get more into kind of some of their technology and the way they move later. But the main thing they're saying about them right now is they act with brutality and coldness. The ones who showed up here were not the cursed founding Minotaurs by any means. They were strategic, tactical plans. They were trapping enemies, layered assaults, feints, etc. But the brutality of that cursed founding did come through.
Yeah, because one of their favorite tactics was using civilians to catch people in their plans. Like, no amount of random citizens was too much. Like, we killed two other Marines. Cool. You're like, you killed so many civilians. Yeah, but we killed those two other Marines.
Yeah, but we got them.
Yeah.
And when they attack, I mean, either descending on a world or ship-to-ship combat, they don't really take prisoners. And they fight with no regard for civilian casualties, too. We'll call it more of that
Let's
later.
Talk about
it
the thing that's rough. One of their defining characteristics, though. Come on. They love
fighting Marines.
Exactly.
Love fighting Marines. Much like, it's the same way for those who play the tabletop where weapons are geared towards fighting Marines. Every single weapon in the Minotaur's arsenal is damaged too.
Yeah. They are just Marine killing fools. And I think that this is another thing about how they were created and how they were raised kind of thing. I think they were always indoctrinated.
Oh, they were made for this.
Yeah.
They were made to kill Marines. And so during the Macarian heresy, something known as the Eucene incident takes place, which kind of sets up the Minotaurs for not being popular. So during the Macarian heresy, there's two loyalist chapters find themselves at odds with each other. There's an ultramarine successor called the Inceptors and the Doom Warriors, who are of an unknown founding. They got into a tiff. There's no record of what caused the issue, but it was an honor conflict between the two. And these were loyalist chapters, by the way. These were not, you know, these weren't like heretics or any of those things. And this is two Space Marine chapters basically focused on fighting each other, not the campaign against the rebellion. And so the Lords of Terra send the Minotaurs to do it. And these guys, by the way, they're not even fighting. They're having these like weird engagements where they're
having a standoff, really.
Yeah, firing at each other a little bit, but doing this. So the Minotaurs look at this situation of two Astartes chapters fighting each other and just decide, screw it. This is a useless distraction. And they attack both of them at full force.
I'll say, yeah, full on.
This full attack translate into and full weapons blaze. The Doom Warriors go by and just they're able to escape, but the Inceptors were trapped. The Minotaurs hunt them down and kill them down to less than 100 remain until they accept their surrender. And the Minotaurs then, insult to injury, take all of their chapter relics and their ships as war spoils and send them back to Ultramar.
Yeah.
At which point the Ultramarines and
shit, like, to talk about talking shit. Here's your stuff. Be better.
And then they send them back to Ultramar. And the Ultramarines and all the successors have vowed revenge on the Minotaurs to this day. Which is interesting. We'll get to it later. Because Gilliman is now technically in charge of the Minotaurs. Sort of, kind of. We'll get there later. Now, they eventually win the McCarran Heresy. Minotaurs disappear again for a bit. The next appearance is Segmentum Solar. This time is on Hive World Hermetica. Hermetica was having a bad day. Hermetica is just having a regular old day, chilling, making stuff for the Imperium, when a Space Hulk appears in orbit. And this is basically a la Armageddon 1.
I was just about to say, nothing good. No one's ever been, a Space Hulk appeared, and then good stuff happened. Because Space Hulks are always chock full of awful every single time. And this was going to be no different. Because it's full of word bearers.
Yeah, and word bearers are never good when they show up because word bearers always bring all the cultists. Yes. And so they pour down onto the planet. And the defenders did what they could, but they got overrun pretty quickly. And they did what they could. They hunker down and they call for support. And it's a good news, bad news of what happens next. The Minotaurs show up because the good news is...
Where's the good news, John?
Well, the Minotaurs do show up. The thing about the Minotaurs is they're a fleet-based chapter. And when they show up as an entirety. So when Space Marines deploy, they deploy in companies. We always talk about this. First company, second company. On occasion, they might throw a couple companies. The Minotaurs don't do that. They come as one, which is, imagine the entirety of the Ultramarines, or, well, the Salamanders are tiny, so we won't care about them, but like the entirety of the Space Wolves showing up at once. That's going to bring a whooping. That's the only way the Minotaurs move. Actually, I believe the Carcharodons may do the same thing. Yeah, it's the only way that they move. Yeah.
Again, I still don't think there's any good news. You should have said the bad news and the bad news, because the Minotaurs show up. And to their credit, the Minotaurs are badass. They start wrecking.
This is my point. The first part of the show up was pretty cool. They show up in orbit and just destroy everything in orbit immediately. Like, oh, cool. The word bearers were up here. No, you're not. Everything in orbit dies. So hooray.
Yeah. And the second part went a little bit worse because they come down and start fighting the ground forces, but also just go, hey, man, there's a bunker over there. Let's just blow it up. Yeah, but it's next to a bunch of civilians. Good to hear. Oh, they just kept blowing stuff up and cutting people down. It was like they were trying to get maximum collateral damage.
Because the Chaos Forces are like not even that close to the sheltering civilians. And they were like, meh, I don't want them running away. And it's just kaboom. And just over and over again. So the Minotaurs are just wrecking shop. I mean, they are, by the way, killing all the Chaos Forces. But the best part is, Minotaurs weren't even done yet. So the main complex of Hive Hermetica is a giant cathedral to St. Lehor. I don't care.
The Anchorite.
I don't care because we don't know. There's no record of who this person is. So I don't care. And honestly, and you know who cares less than me?
The Minotaurs.
Yeah. It's because they were like, neat. And so the Chaos moved into the cathedral because it's a super defensible position. And the Minotaurs went, all right, Thunderhawks, and bombarding the thing.
It's actually something that's said when you're reading about it, is they moved in there because they didn't think they would want to destroy a holy cathedral and wreck it, so they would be easier to defend because they'd have to funnel them in. And the Minotaurs went, I give zero about this.
Mentor just start blowing it up. And then we get to our first instance of the chapter master of the Minotaurs, Asterion Moloch, who is quite a treat.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
In my professional life, one thing I know well is how challenging managing a global team can be. Just the act of creating one has been extremely challenging over the years. Because the one thing you learn quickly is the difficulty of hiring global talent and how unclear the costs can be. It looks simple at first, then the fees start to stack up with compliance worries, contractors versus employees, and a host of other regulations. People brings clarity with upfront, all-in hiring costs and enables you to hire the world. People is an AI-powered human resource platform built for founders, HR leaders, and operators who are hiring and supporting teams around the world. People helps you hire, pay, and manage talent in over 185 countries with fast onboarding that can be done in minutes. Instead of juggling separate tools for contracts, payroll, benefits, and compliance, People brings everything together with built-in compliance and local expertise to support you. This is especially helpful if you're managing teams internationally or planning to grow. The fastest growing companies in the world use People to stay organized and reduce risk, and founders use it to scale faster without feeling like they need to become HR or compliance experts. Bottom line, it simplifies global people operation so you can spend more time growing the business and supporting your team. People's new standard discounted pricing is only $399 per month per employee. That helps you contain costs. Go to hipeople.ai to get a free estimate. That's hipeble.ai for a free estimate. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Financial stress affects far more than our bank accounts. It can take a serious toll on mental health and relationships. With 88% of Americans feeling some sort of financial stress at the start of 2026, money worries often bring anxiety, sleep disruption, and even depression. And they're one of the leading sources of conflict for couples. This month, we want to normalize the emotional weight of financial stress and remind people that struggling with money doesn't mean that they've failed. Sometimes, it's just about accessing the right kind of support. I know for me, I've had a few points in my life where I got overly worked up about a job or bills or the like. That stress led to more anxiety as it created other challenges in my life that I tried to deal with poorly. Therapy is a great way to build better coping strategies and feel less alone with all forms of stress and anxiety, be they financial or other. With BetterHelp, you can be matched with quality therapists with care and reliability. BetterHelp does the initial matching for you, helping you find the right therapist for your needs, while at the same time providing flexibility to change amongst their over 30,000 therapists at any time. BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, having served over 6 million people globally. So when life feels overwhelming, therapy can help. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P. com. Now, I am going to tell you this. When the GW wrote this, I am 100% that someone at GW has a degree in religious studies, because this is one of the best naming mechanics I've ever seen. Zeus's son is King Minos. Minos is Asterion. There you go. So the first name is King Minos Asterion. So his first name is Asterion. By the way, the Minotaur was his son, well, half-son. Long story short, if Poseidon wants a bull, don't try to pull a little switcheroo on him. He'll get mad. Secondarily, I don't really understand why when you breed a herbivore with an omnivore, you get a giant bipedal man-eating carnivore thing.
It's really good at mazes.
Yeah. If you're going to go spelunking, always bring some string. Now, the more interesting one is his second name, Moloch. And this one I like a lot because I also have a degree in this stuff. Moloch was for many, many years, was thought to be one of the Canaanite gods from the Hebrew Bible, although we think now it might be something different. But Moloch's name appears in Leviticus. It's been around for a while. Moloch was a god that was actually children were sacrificed to, but was depicted as having a bull-headed human that sacrifices were given to. So GW went, ham on this naming mechanic, where they were like, all right, let's take the two references that exist of bullheaded human and go and just give him both of those, which is significantly better than a lot of the other times they've named people, like the Iron Hands or
let it go.
Salamanders. Anyway, so Asterion Moloch is a nightmare, by the way. He is effectively he's a mix of Abaddon, Iron Father Pharos, and Small Primarch. He's just a beast.
Yeah, but he's also he's half man, half machine.
Robot.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, that's the problem with him. Yeah, he's massively built with cybernetics. He's pushing Primarch size. He's not Tiberos big, but, you know, he's big. He's really big. And he's mean. Now, what's interesting about him is that he also is really ruthless in combat. He loves fighting at the front. He leads from the front, and he loves taking on, like, almost a perverse joy in one-on-one combat, which he always wins, in not Dread Pirate Robert sense, where it's, I have bested you and I will leave you be. No, he just slaughters everybody and then moves on with his day. Like, he is brutal. Yeah, or not even, I guess I should probably be more talking about, what's the Slaanesh guy who...
Lucius
the swordsman? Lord? Lucius. Because Lucius will play with you. Moloch
does not.
Moloch does not.
He just cuts you down and moves on.
He's more like Karn. In that regard, he is unpleasant. So obviously, because they move as one, anywhere the Minotaurs are, Moloch goes. But whenever he appears in the battlefield, things get a lot worse for everybody. And on Hermetic, this is what happens. Moloch and his Terminators, because he's in Terminator, are teleport down to the surface and go door to door looking for chaos. Unfortunately, some doors had civilians behind them. Civilians who weighed less than a door and didn't do well when said door exploded.
Well, that's how you open the door, is you fired grenades into it.
Yeah. Yeah. By the time they finished, the Chaos Forces were completely routed. Every leader had been destroyed. Although I think actually the Sorcerer may have fled before Moloch could kill him. What I did like is that the Senatorum got a ton of complaints about the Minotaur's actions, and they were like, which weirdly fell on deaf ears, because it was like, hey, you guys sent them here and they just wrecked everything. And they were like, oh yeah, anyway. But again, Minotaurs disappear for a bit, and the next time they appear, and we covered this before, is Bedab. So we covered Bedab before, but I want to talk a little bit more about the Minotaurs and the Lamenters, because it's a key bit about the Minotaur's style. In the Bedab Wars, we had an Astarte Civil War. The Lords of Terra didn't like this for a lot of obvious reasons. They'd already seen three chapters declare loyalty to the Renegade Astral Claws. So they're getting nervous about other Space Marines being sent out there and doing the same. So to kind of protect their assets, they sent the Minotaurs to the region, you know, to handle it. Fun little side note, it's actually written in the book. It's the brutality and violence of the Minotaurs was considered like atrocious until the Carcharodons arrived. And everyone's
and
like,
red
oh, good God. Yeah, and they were like, what is wrong with those guys? And it's like, no. Now, as Brad mentioned earlier, the Minotaurs are especially adept at fighting Astartes. And so they loved this deployment. We're going to go and we're going to fight Space Marines. Because their basic number one function behind the scenes is to hunt down Renegade chapters.
Well, we're
going to... Air quotes.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Yeah.
Renegade air chapters...
Air quotes.
Pretty wide in your... in defining what that is.
During the Bedab Wars, the Lamenters, who were a Blood Angel's successor, had an oath to the Astral Claws. So they fought with them, but they got cornered by the Minotaurs. The Minotaurs tracked down their fortress monastery, and they launched this kind of light attack into the fortress monastery, knowing it would draw all the Lamenters in, which it did. Once they all appeared, the full Minotaur fleet translated in, and this incredible space battle began, all boarding actions. It was over before it began. The numerically superior Minotaurs were going to win, not to mention the fact that Minotaurs are physically superior to the Lamenters. They're a bigger, stronger force. Well, they're also bigger people. I mean, like, you're fighting, they have better equipment. It's just, it was never going to go well, and it didn't. So in the end, and there's conflicting stories on this, some have it at 300, some at as low as 100 Lamenters survived. But either way, the chapter was all but destroyed. However, though, they did, side note, go on a penitent crusade, which they have succeeded and come out the other side of, which made the Blood Angels really happy because the Lamenters seem to be immune to the Black Rage and the Red Thirst. So
you're sad.
Yeah, that's all it takes is just be sad. Now, we've talked about the Minotaurs being the bad guys. That's not always the case. Sometimes they are the heroes, though they will come to the aid of other chapters and Imperial forces that are overrun, like on Rin's World, because the Crimson Fists can't aim a rocket up.
I love that you just choose that part, because Brad is running Rin's World for Adepticon Team Tournament.
Yeah. Is there a rocket facing the wrong way?
Look, man, the orcs had air superiority.
I'll be honest, you're not building the display board. I'll ask Alan. That's like, you're the wrong one to ask that question to. The truth is, after almost losing a critical world for the Imperium, the Fist sent out a request for aid, because this was a massive orc war. And the call was answered by quite the collection of chapters, by the way. You have the Imperial Fists, makes sense, they were successor. The White Scars, I have no idea who that is. The White Panthers, who actually have a super cool black backstory. I'd look this up. The White Panthers only exist because in 1994, GW hosted a design a chapter competition, and some dude wrote a really good story. And this is back when GW had their own painters called Evie Metal, and they painted up a tactical squad, and that's where the White Panthers came from. I will say, as an American, not a great name. Just gonna say that. But then there were we're the White Panthers. I need to ask some follow-up questions. That's all. Then you have the Storm Lords, who I'm pretty sure are in Age of Sigmar. The Angels and Carmine, who are just a weirdo chapters of the Blood Angels. And the Blood Drinkers, who, never mind, even weirder chapter of the Blood Angels. And then the Minotaurs. So, by the way, they all get together and they kind of A-team their way to victory and kill the orcs.
It's a good book, by the way. Read it.
Yeah, it's good. It's a very good book, but just calling it out. They also come to the defense of a major guard recruitment world called the Bifrost, because some gene stealer cult had infiltrated it and there was a rebellion. And the Lords of Terror were like, yeah, no. And the Minotaurs did that, saved the planet. And after this one's a weird one to me, because they saved the planet from a gene stealer cult uprising and they let the planet keep making guard regiments, which I'm always like,
those guys were
gene stealer cult there. Like, but anyway. Those are the happy stories. Let's get back to the Minotaurs being monsters.
Being terrible.
There's some, oh God, because the Night Reaper story is freaking awesome. All right. This is great. Imperial Armor, book 13. Because I'm sure I call them out when I can. The Night Reapers are a loyalist chapter of unknown lineage. And it's unknown because it's been fully redacted because they don't exist anymore. Spoiler alert. I don't know. They're out in Segmentum Pacificus to deal with a rebellion there from a renegade space marine chapter called the Sons of Gilliman. They'd fallen to chaos and they'd been getting joined by a bunch of chaos warbands. I'll be honest, it's basically the same story as the Bedab War. There's almost no difference when you read it. Like, okay, so it's just Huron Blackheart, but less piratey. Kind of. Whatever. Still a cool story. The Night Reapers didn't fall to chaos. They're actually out there defending the shrine world of Salvation Gamma. And the scanners worked, Brad. For once, the scanners were working.
What?
I know. And on the scanners, they see like the entirety of the chaos force coming there. And there's just no way they're going to be able to stop this. Not only are they going to lose, but the world's going to fall. And they know what chaos forces would do to a shrine world. So they decide the best thing to do is give the population a merciful end. And they exterminatus the planet. Which actually is like, it's kind of noble. Okay, look, you guys are going to get... Well, so your options are, we cannot evacuate you. I mean, actually, they probably could.
Fight and call for reinforcements. There's so many other options.
Well, they decided they couldn't do that. So they decide, what if we just blow them up from orbit so they'll die in a second versus chaos gets there? Anyway, so this is what they went with.
Defend them.
Fine. Well, anyway, the Ecclesiarchy agrees with Brad, which is how we all know Brad's wrong. The Ecclesiarchy lose their minds about this, and they demand, especially about Astartes chapter, blowing up a shrine world. And they want to label them heretics and all this stuff. But the problem is that it's actually not heresy what they did. They just didn't really save a population. They spared a population from chaos. And so what they decided to do was banish them to the fringe of the galaxy, which is like on effectively an unlimited penitent crusade, which is a death sentence on its own, but at least we don't lose a Space Marine chapter because they are pretty valuable. After less than a decade out there,
they kind of were there, but continue. They basically got called in to do a whole bunch of stuff. They were big air quotes banished. No.
Yeah.
No, they weren't.
What happens next is, so they are out there for a while, less than a decade, and this area is called the Lana Rift. A rogue trader fleet is out there exploring and just gets destroyed. And all it says is, upon investigation, it's, my guess is just like there was video that got sent back. The Night Reapers did it.
Yeah.
And at this point, now you are traitors. Something's up. But the Inquisition is really concerned about this. They don't want to send anything out there. Their viewpoint is, hey, something's off about this situation. So they send the Minotaurs and the Red Templars, which is the Inquisition Space Marine group. Hey, you guys go deal with this. They get out there. And remember, the Minotaurs are an incredibly large and powerful fleet. They arrive ready to just kick ass and take names. And start not losing, but having a problem out the gate.
Get a real fight Night for a change. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the Night Reapers have alien weaponry in all their ships. And it's bad. It takes them 3 years of conflict and battle until they finally figure out what's going on. They find the home base of the Night Reapers, which is this giant, like, alien construct in the middle. It's a space Hulk, sort of.
You know what it is? It's the Star Forge from Coder, Knights of the Old Republic 1.
No, you're right. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Night Reapers are excavating this thing for technology. So the ensuing battle is about to begin. And they've brought in, at this point, Imperial reinforcements to kind of wage this battle. And just as they're about to go after the Star Forge, the Grey Knights show up. And the Grey Knights go, everyone leave except the Minotaurs. And all the Imperial forces go, all right, we'll leave. Because again, you don't want to see the Grey Knights, because you know what happens if you see the Grey Knights? Everyone's like, yeah, I want nothing to do with this situation. This only ends bad for me. I'm happy to leave. So the Grey Knights and the Minotaurs attack the alien vessel and the Night Reapers together. During the conflict, the alien vessel explodes. So they actually get onto this vessel, by the way, and killing the entire Grey Knight force that's inside of it, and almost all the Minotaurs.
Everybody in the Minotaurs.
Except of note, Astarion Moloch was on that ship when it blew up. He survives. Or does he? And we'll talk about that in a little bit. So I just love that story, because it was like, nope, no one is trusted, just you guys. And yeah, every Grey Knight died blowing this thing up. So it's quite possible it might have had a teensy little bit of chaos going floating through it. Now, the next one for the Minotaurs is actually not as impressive a story for them. It's just more of a story. And this is when they fight the Necrons. Segmentum Tempestus, so the aft part of the galaxy. This is down in the Orphean sector. Out of nowhere, the Necrons attack. And the attack is so sudden and brutal that it actually resembles a Tyranid invasion, because world after world just goes dark. And what makes this complicated is this as in the early days of the Necron Awakening. So the Imperium doesn't know very much about them. And by the Imperium, I mean the AdMech knows a ton about them, didn't tell anybody.
I was going to say, and there's so many Death people Watch that know. No.
And the Inquisition, but no one else does.
I love that you said that. I was like, just going to jump all over this because you're like, yeah. Nobody knows about them. Well, except for these guys and these guys and these guys. So many people knew.
Yeah. What? So what ends up being really funny about this, though, the part of the story that's awesome is after taking a bunch of worlds, the Necrons just stop attacking. And the Imperium's like just scrambling. Like, all right, where is the attack coming from? They're looking around, trying to figure out where the next punch is coming from. And because they're assuming it's demonic in nature. The way this is happening, it's just, it's too weird. And they don't know what Necron is. And then this massive pulse blows through the whole area. And this pulse burns out astropaths. But in the pulse is a message. And the message is, Maynark comes. Maynark comes. Because it's the Maynark dynasty. And Maynark does show up after that. And they hit hard. Entire worlds turn to ash almost in an instant. Anything less than a full regiment of guard falls immediately. But the advance eventually stalls on the world of Amara. Because on Amara, there are millions of Kriegmen.
And Kriegs.
And Kriegs.
They do what it does, yeah. Which is,
I have a shovel.
Yeah.
I don't care. Yes.
I love the fact that they're like, they're putting everybody in wood chippers. Yes. But if we put everybody in the wood chippers,
yes,
we'll stall them up and they won't be able to run.
Yeah. So. It's basically, you know what's bad for a wood chipper? A big metal shovel. And so,
nope, so the Krieg, a million metal shovels.
Yes, we've got this. So the Krieg start just slowing the Necrons down, which is enough time for the Minotaurs to arrive in orbit. And at this point, the Imperial Navy has been trying to fight the Necrons in orbit. Not well. They're getting their butts handed. The Minotaurs show up, and they do have more powerful ships and more aggressive tactics. Chapter Master Moloch is there, and he goes prison rules when he arrives. He looks around, picks up the biggest Necron ship, and decides to go punch it in the face.
and he did punch it in the face, by the way. Because
yeah.
They did boarding actions, and yeah. Punch it in the face.
They straight up ram this thing, get as close as they can, bunch of Minotaurs go in.
Yeah, but it's not even this is Minotaurs.
Awesome.
He has a bunch of dreadnoughts inside his ship. Who boards a yeah. ship with a dreadnought? Sorry, yeah. not one, a bunch of dreadnoughts.
Yes. Yeah, it's even cooler than that. So the boring torpedoes hit the Necron ship, which they're also shooting at while they're doing the boring torpedoes because the Minotaurs are psychopaths. Then once inside, they basically carry in a homing beacon, hit the button, Moloch and Dreadnoughts appear inside the ship and go, let's party. Moloch fights his way to the bridge where him and the Overlord meet each other. He jams his spear, which is 100% a Dark Age of Technology spear, 1000%, into the Overlord as the ship breaks apart. They both get sucked into space. As that happens, by the way, the Minotaurs ram a ship into this thing, which is just enough for the Necrons to go, all right, message received, and they bail.
Why are you guys so weird, man?
Yeah, like, get it. But what I love about after all of that, this whole system is pretty beat up. Of course, Chaos shows up. And so it's going, well, cool. This is like, this whole place is beat to hell. Let's start building cults. So the Lords of Terror go to the Minotaurs and go, yeah, thanks for saving it. Can you exterminate it now?
Yeah.
And the Minotaurs are like,
everyone.
Yeah, got it. Because that's just what they do. And so right there, I want to talk a bit more about the Minotaurs themselves before we get to the end of the cast. And namely, gene seed recruitment and equipment. The gene seed's really quick. It's just chimeric. It's made up of a jumble of chapters like Jamba Juice, which is Jamba Juice still around? I actually don't know. I always thought it was gross, but is it still around?
I don't know. Either way, you're blending up a bunch of stuff. There you go.
Yeah, so fine. They're the Jamba Juice chapter. There we go. The cooler part, though, is recruitment and equipment. So their equipment is nuts. And this comes in a few different forms. First off, they've stolen a ton of relics. Every time they get sent out to go put down a heavy air quotes, renegade chapter,
which is basically just somebody the Lords of Terra don't like or don't want around, but continue.
Yeah. They then kill them all. But the chapter was renegade. Their equipment isn't, so they just keep it all as spoils of war. So this chapter has more like relic weaponry and war gear. Like, basically, right now we don't pay for war gear at the tabletop, but man, these guys would have been OP in 8th edition.
Yeah. So much and also, war gear.
Yeah, and their ships too. Like, their ships have like cannons and lances that are just that rival the Admech. So when they go to war, they bring the womp. At the same time, though, just their regular weaponry is better. Like, they've got Volkite, they've got lances, all that. That's just commonplace, where most, like, Astartes might have one Volkite pistol, which I know for people who play tabletop, that sounds weird, because they're like, yeah, my whole squad.
Yeah, squad.
I know you did. I know you did. But in the lore, it'd be like, oh, yeah, the entire first company of the Ultramarines have one Volkite pistol, and, like, the, you know, Minotaurs are playing, are juggling with them. The levels are different.
They have a bunch of Contemptor dreadnoughts. They have so many old...
Well, the Contemptor is the craziest thing, because in the Orphean War, they had at least 10 Contemptors in the field. The Contemptor dreadnought has been out of production since the Horus Heresy. The Admech cannot make them anymore. So that means, first off, that means they stole all these. We'll just... Step one, all of these are stolen. They're all maintained. I mean, most times don't even have one of these. I know, again, tabletop versus lore. The Minotaurs, this is incredible to have them. But what's crazier about them is that usually when someone's entombed in a dreadnought, they're treated with incredible respect. Like, oh, this is an elder of our chapter. I can't, you know, we should bow down to them. And the Minotaurs basically look at the guy like, oh, yeah.
Minotaurs are
him. Yeah. And it's like, they're actually almost second-class Minotaurs, because I think it's because they view it as, oh, he fell in battle. He should have been better at it. Like, ugh. And this may have to do with the other thing I want to talk about, which is their recruitment, which is psychotic. Because one thing, it's a weird thing. We're not supposed to know anything about this, but we somehow do know a lot about it because GW writing. But Minotaurs are a fleet-based chapter. So they get recruits on the move. We don't know if it's volunteers like Imperial Fists or volunteered like Carcharodons.
I think it's
the same. Just know.
I think it's the latter.
Most likely, yeah.
What's crazy is they do all the regular stuff, but they wackily indoctrinate them. Like, you know, eyes forced open. You have to watch the video and for, you know, 100 hours. It's crazy what they do.
Well, they also talk about they indoctrinate them both with, and I don't know exactly how this works genetically. I don't know how that works. The psychological indoctrination, okay. I've seen, what is that Kubrick film? Whatever it's called, the Kubrick film. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. I've seen that, but I don't know how you genetically indoctrinate someone. Anyway, but what happens is every Minotaur is lockstep in the chapter. And so once they get in, they also are able to then progress a lot faster. Whatever this method of indoctrination is, they don't have as high of a casualty rate going through the gene seed implantation.
Are you talking, you don't even need to put, you can edit this out. You were talking about Clockwork Orange, right?
Clockwork Orange, yeah. Clockwork Orange. Thank you.
Right,
yeah,
we're good. Sorry.
Yeah, that's what I could remember Kubrick. I could remember the image. I just couldn't remember the name. But yeah.
No, you're good. So, it was just sticking with me. I'm like, wait a minute. What was he actually talking about?
But yeah, so what's crazy about the Minotaurs, though, is that with this indoctrination system that they use, they actually are able to replenish faster than anybody else. They talk about this a lot, where, because they fight rough. They are not fighting from the back, being cautious. They go full bore because they're always able to use their gene seed and their special tricks to replenish as fast as they can.
Is this another chapter you think is cloning?
I don't know. That's the hard thing about them. It's possible, because you're not supposed to clone, but I guess they totally would.
They don't care. They're using a shit ton of forbidden everything. And they do take wild losses, and then are instantaneously back up to
fighting. Actually, that would make sense for this last little bit too, though, because of the Death Guard situation. Because the Death Guard in the 10th edition Codex decided to stick it to the Minotaurs. And they somehow attacked their fortress monastery and dropped the Nurgle Plague into it. And the Nurgle Plague infected all of the gene seed in the monastery, basically making it barren because they couldn't use any of the gene seed. And then the Minotaurs had to flee the Death Guard because they had to rush back to Terra where the healthy gene seed was while being whittled away by the Death Guard the whole way through. So good on you, Death Guard. But let's talk about a very fun story. Yes. The Hexarchy.
You like it.
Because this works really well with our cast last week. Yes. That's why I'm excited for this
one. You like it a ton because G-Man gets to stick it to everybody.
This is great.
I like it because the Lords of Terra get kicked in the face. So
yeah. So this one's hilarious. So the most recent actions of the Minotaurs actually involve Gilliman, sort of. So last week we talked about how the Lords of Terra really love giving up power. So when Gilliman returns, he was not really popular with them. And a bunch of them decided while he was off Terra to try and take the power back. And I really do foresee this whole thing as a bunch of preteens blasting, like Rage Against the Machine to build up the courage, like only to lose so badly. Just get clapped right in the face. So their plan was to undo all the changes Gilliman made, just the ones that took their power away, and like vote Gilliman off the island. Yeah, was kind of what they were going for.
They also voting amongst themselves. Like they were in the basement going, yay, let's do a vote. Do we all vote that we're awesome? Yes, cool, great.
But what they did before they did it, though, they called the Minotaurs back to stand next to them because they knew we're going to have some problems. By the way, the Minotaurs, they're good. They were going to stand against the entirety of the Imperium. This was never going to work. But anyway, what's funny, though, is this entirely predictable thing happened. And it's not what maybe some of you are thinking, but you should all be thinking. The Lords of Terra, who took part in the Hexarchy, which they called it because there were six of them, Hex, okay, made a colossal error. They did what they always do. They kept thinking their largest danger were the Astartes because they're going to attack us from the front. They're going to kill them all, and they're going to basically restructure Terra again. And they forgot the real number one threat to the Lords of Terra has been and forever will be the Assassin's Guild. It is just throughout history, that one. And they forgot that because the head of the Assassin's Guild was part of the Hexarchy. Except, of course, he wasn't. Obviously, he's a double agent because, by the way, that's what the head of the Assassin's Guild has also done every single time.
So he kills all five of them.
Yep. And the Minotaurs arrive. The Minotaurs arrive seeing all the Lords of Terra dead. Well, the ones who called them. And they actually get ready to attack. And they're going to attack what Space Marines are there. And more importantly, Trajan and the Custodes, along with a bunch of Sisters of Battle. And what I like about this is that all that's written is before the battle can begin, the head of the Administratum walks over to Asteron Moloch and whispers something in his ear. And Moloch stands up because he had to lean down because it's a human and just goes, all right, we're out, and leaves.
But he, not even that. He's not only just this guy, but he joins the Indominus Crusade.
Exactly. So we don't know what was said, but he does that. Last little bit I want to talk about is Moloch. Moloch is complicated because he has cheated death too many times.
No, he hasn't.
He's been blown up. He's sure. been stabbed. He's not Vulcan. I understand where you're going.
I know, but no. What I'm saying is, No, he's not. He's 007. He's Dread Pirate Roberts. It's a different guy each time, in my opinion.
Yeah. So that this becomes the question. This is the lore question on him. Are we doing Dread Pirate Roberts? 007's lame. Do Dread Pirate Roberts. It's a much better movie. But have there been numerous Molochs over the years, or is he a perpetual? And the only reason I could see it being perpetual is if this is my argument for this, it's a chimeric chapter. If they were crafting a chapter, why wouldn't they have made the chapter master a perpetual?
Sure, but he's juiced up with so much augmentations. I just think they choose a new guy, put a bunch of stuff in him.
But if they make him a perpetual, he never loses his memories, which also does help. That's the problem. If it's a new guy goes in, then you have to. It just gets complicated.
From the stories, he's just been in places where like he's just gone.
Yeah, this is more for the Discord. Guys, come to the Discord and have comments about this. But I do, anyone who's read a lot about Moloch, that's my theory. I think he's a perpetual, which I think he was crafted, and they had to give them a super-powered chapter master. So why not make him a perpetual? That way he can kind of do whatever, and he'll always keep coming back. So, but with that, that's the Minotaurs, guys. Pretty interesting. They're going to pop up here and there as we cover more stuff, because they do appear in really quite a lot of the lore from the 41st millennia on. But next week, we're going to go from one fan request to another, and it probably should be 2 weeks. Krieg. We're going to finally go back into Death Corps of Krieg. We touched on them when we did our Imperial Guard episodes, but I was told it wasn't enough, and people are correct.
It's Death Corps.
Fine, Death Corps? Is it? Ah, whatever, I don't care. Next week. So for the next 2 weeks, you're going to hear me wax poetically about my love of Krieg shovels, of Krieg bravery, of all these about Krieg, at the same time, bitch incessantly about horses. So it's going to be a bit of a party.
So many horses.
That's the problem with Krieg for me. I love the whole, like, Krieg running off with a shovel to go hit a swarm lord. Cool as hell. But then they hop on a horse. And so we may have to spend 10 minutes of me explaining what the charge of the Light Brigade was next week. We'll see. So it's going to be fun. Excited. But until then, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys then.